You clock out. We clock in. Welcome to the Torn by Sports Lunch Break.
This is the Torn by Sports Lunch Break, and I am Alan Martindale. We continue our preview of the Royal Purple Las Vegas Bowl with our guest, Joseph Silverswig from BlockU.com. Joseph, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk with us and preview little Vegas Bowl.
Well, sure thing, Alan.
The first question I ask all of our guests is, the regular season's done. Could you give us a grade on Utah football's season?
Well, one thing that I try and do is to set expectations at the beginning of the season based on what seems reasonable, and then try not to adjust them too much, even as things either go well or go poorly, because you never know how it's going to wind up. So I think I'd probably give it a B+. I projected the Utes for a 9-3 season. I thought they would. I thought they'd lose to Oregon and beat Arizona, but other than that, it was pretty close to what we expected, and that's good. You always want the team to exceed expectations, but particularly given the injuries that they suffered towards the end of the season on offense, I think that 9-3 is a darn good way to finish up a regular season.
And a chance to get 10 wins going into the Vegas Bowl. This is a rivalry bowl. You know, a lot of Ute fans have been very, very vocal about not wanting to play BYU at all in the future. I'm curious to get your thoughts on the rivalry.
You know, I like the rivalry. I enjoy it. Sometimes I think that the kind of venom gets to be a little bit too much for me, and I like to take a break from it now and again. It was awesome to have an opportunity to play Michigan, and that wasn't an opportunity we would have had if we'd been playing BYU every year. But what makes college football special is rivalries and tradition and history. And I think that there's really, not just for Ute fans and BYU fans, but for college football fans, there's almost a responsibility to keep a rivalry like this alive, because it's just such an important part of the college football landscape. And you could see that when you look at the way ESPN and other agencies are rating this bowl game. I mean, Ute fans have been a little down on it. But the nation is up. They're excited to see a game where the Chiefs know each other and hate each other the way that these guys do it. And it's a fun change of pace from, wait, who are we playing again? And so it's, I don't know. I like it. I wish that we had more games in the season so that we could play another kind of high level opponent, a Power 5 opponent. I think it's a lot to ask for the Utes to play a top tier Power 5 school and BYU in the same season. But it is what it is, and I think we should keep playing them at least say 3 out of 4 years or thereabouts.
Yeah, I agree. I just think college football is better in general when you have rivalries, and with so much
right.
with the TV deals and everything else, all the money changing hands and conference affiliations, we're losing a little bit of that. So I just think it's a lot of fun, you know, but to have a rivalry game in a bowl game is incredible. It doesn't happen very often. I know a lot of the fans are disappointed with the Las Vegas Bowl. Are you getting a sense from the players and coaches that they're excited to play their rival in the bowl game, or are they disappointed in the bowl that they received?
You know, I think, listening to Coach Whittingham, I think Coach Whittingham, not so much disappointed as perhaps sort of irritated at the process of the popularity, beauty pageant kind of quality that it has. Where, I mean, USC's 8-5. So, you know, they have no business being in a higher tier bowl than a 9-3 Utah team. And that's just... And so I think they're kind of irritated at the process, but I think the game itself sort of stands apart from that. And I think a number of these players are really excited, particularly some of our seniors who actually haven't had the opportunity to play BYU. Johnny Paul had to sit out in 2013, but he's never had a chance to knock down a BYU player. That's a rite of passage for a youth.
Absolutely. You know, I've heard a lot of people through the media saying, you know, a lot of these newer players don't understand the rivalry. I kind of disagree. Do you think that even though some of these younger guys haven't had a chance to play the Cougars, do you get the sense that they understand how important this rivalry is?
They certainly seem to, but Brenton Covey is raring to go. I hope he'll be able to play because it's a special experience. I think for him in particular, because his family has ties with BYU and things like that. But they seem to carry that same intensity into it to a degree where sometimes, you know, Utah fans and writers have felt that it maybe works to the detriment of the youth and games that come immediately afterwards. There's a little bit of an emotional letdown and sort of a flatness among the youth. I don't think they're ever gonna stop loving to play BYU.
Now, you know, getting into the game a little bit and kind of the nuts and bolts, are the Utes going to have to change their offensive game plan due to all these key injuries they have?
You know, I've been looking into the sort of statistical impact that injuries from the injuries. Certainly, Devontae Booker has been a huge change, but I don't think you change your scheme because Joe Williams is basically the same player. He's just not quite as good. He doesn't break tackles quite as well. He doesn't have the ability to make guys miss as Devontae Booker has. He's the same kind of player. So I don't think that really changes. He's going to catch and pass out of the backfield and that kind of thing. The biggest change that happened to our offensive system was when Siale Fakiolatonga went down. He was the second of the Utah's two starting tight ends to go down. We lost Evan Moyai on his first play of the season. He caught a little 5-yard pass and blew his Achilles out. And I think that losing those tight ends really changed the offense. We lost Siale in Arizona State during the Arizona State game towards the end, and it really wasn't the same after that. I think that there were multiple reasons for that. I think pass blocking is a big part of it. Harrison Hanley's a darn good receiver, but he's not as capable of a blocker as Siale or Evan Moyai. And that cost us a little bit, I think, particularly in the deep passing game. I don't think that Wilson felt like he had the same amount of time or the same kind of guys he could rely on. And then at the very end of the season, when Kenneth Scott goes down, Edbert Covey goes down. I mean, there just isn't a receiver on the roster at that point who can really get open against the Pac-12 quarterback. But I think sticking to what you do is the way you go, especially considering that they're not going up against Pac-12 quarterbacks. I think that our receivers are going to find it easier to get open in terms of the one-on-one matchup issues.
Also, you know, you mentioned Joe Williams. I think him having a little bit of extra speed, a little bit more speed than Devontae Booker, obviously not quite the back that Booker is, but having that extra speed, I think, could actually help Utah with that the BYU defense. It really struggles against the run.
I think that's very true. There's a different kind of – BYU's got a good defense. They're going to get it after the quarterback, but they don't have the same kind of elite athletes that you see on a week-to-week basis in the Pac-12. So a guy like Williams, once he gets past that first level, is going to be really, really hard for these BYU kids to catch.
Do you expect to see any trick plays to kind of compensate for some of those injuries on offense?
If you go over the film, you see that they're using a lot of trick plays throughout the end of the season. The issue is that they're not working. One trick play that I think they've tried three or four times over the course of the season is a fake screen pass. It worked really well with Devontae Booker because of the degree to which the secondary has to respect Booker in the screen game. But other players that they can be more aggressive when it comes to trying to tackle them and just sort of going right after them haven't had the time to sort of set their feet and make that downfield pass that they need to make. Britton Covey's had a couple of plays like that. Harrison Hanley actually had one, and they just haven't worked out. So I think they'll continue to call them, but I just don't think that they're going to work the way that we were hoping they'd be able to work on a consistent basis. Watching that Oregon game, where that just seems like everything was going their way in that game, and whatever you did was going to work perfectly.
Well, and moving to the other side of the ball, Utah's defense has struggled at times against the pass, especially towards the end of the year. Obviously, Tanner Mangum is phenomenal. Those receivers are phenomenal. Plus, they're as tall as giants. Do you anticipate their air attack giving Utah a lot of trouble?
I don't think so. I think that the level of dominance of this defensive line is going to really limit their ability to get downfield. Tanner Mangum is good at creating. He's good at creating extra time and sort of throwing downfield. But if you start to break down those plays, they're not necessarily the best thrown balls or the best plays. It just kind of happen to go their way on the few occasions where they've tried them or they haven't had another option. And Utah's pretty darn good at making those things not work for other teams, as long as you're not dealing with a chest-tight mobile quarterback. That they tend to struggle at stopping those kind of mobile quarterbacks from sort of making plays out of broken plays. But once a play is broken against the Utah defense, it tends to stay that way. And I think that'll continue, although Satterbank, I'm sure is talented, and I wish we had a couple of those big, tall BYU receivers to throw to on the youth.
No doubt. It'd make things quite a bit easier, for sure. So you don't anticipate a whole lot of change in the defensive scheming at all?
I don't think so. You might see a little bit less of the 4-2-5 that they call, because BYU's got more of a pro-style set. You're not going to see Tanner Mangum running around too much. So I think they might continue to have four in the secondary and three linebackers out there. Although a lot of that's going to depend on the injury situation. I don't know how 100% Johnny Paul is going to be. And if they're down to second string linebackers with the lack of depth they have at that position this year, I think they'll probably continue to call the 4-2-5 just to get the best athletes out on the field.
Do you anticipate John Pease dialing up a little bit more pressure to maybe rattle Tanner Mangum a bit?
I think he seems to be very consistent. He seems to do what he does and sort of lets that work in the way that it does. And I think particularly against Tanner Mangum, that's a good idea, because he's at his best when things are breaking down. And what you want to put him in is a situation where he's got a clock ticking, but he's got to stay in the pocket and sort of play quarterback. Can't just run around and play football. And so I think the best way to put him in that position is to leave guys in coverage and create a field that he's got to see and make him make reads, that he's not going to have wide open players because we've got blitzers coming at him.
Yeah, and Utah's done a great job this year in forcing turnovers, despite not getting a whole lot of pressure, at least not what we're used to. So, are you expecting Utah to keep forcing those turnovers in this game?
I do. I think they'll continue to do that. And I think that the turnovers are coming as a result of the pressure that Utah is getting. Early on in the season, I did some research and watched some film. And what you saw is that the teams would drop a lot of players into pass protection. So whereas you normally would expect Utah State to have four or five wide receivers out there, they could quarterback set. They have two running backs and a tight end back there half the time. And what that created was these situations where they were able to block the pass rush, but they weren't able to control the number of defenders that were kind of in space. And somebody would be sort of hanging in underneath an open wide receiver and able to go up and get those balls. And then towards the end of the games, when opposing teams were down, they'd have to drop those guys out of pass coverage and into their typical offensive roles, and that's when those sacks started to pile up. The Utah State game and the Michigan game were great examples of that at work. And so I wonder if the change from sacks to interceptions isn't in part a result of last year's success at getting after the quarterbacks and a change in the way that offensive coordinators are scheming in terms of dialing up extra pass protection to try and keep their quarterbacks on their feet.
Now, switching kind of to the BYU side of things, are you expecting their players to play with a little bit more intensity, a little bit more passion, considering this is Bronco's last game and he hasn't beat the Utes in four tries, so 6 years total? Do you expect them to really come out swinging to kind of get one for their coach?
I think they probably will. I think that Bronco's got a lot of respect amongst his players, and I think that he's worked hard to earn that in the right way
And I believe he's going for his 100th win, and it'll be his first win in a while over the Utes. And there's a lot at stake for BYU, I think, in terms of finishing a career or a part of Bronco's career with BYU is just the right way. And I do think that's going to matter to them from a storyline perspective. How much of a difference that makes, I don't know. I mean, I'm a stat hit guy, so I figure once they get out on the field after the first couple of snaps, the guy who could bench press more and run faster can still bench press more and run faster, even though you know, the other ones are feeling it more. I think it's going to boil down to athlete and scheme and you know, who plays better.
So who has the most on the line, so to speak? Who would benefit more by a win, and who would it be worse for with a loss?
Well, I think the Utes would definitely be worst off with a loss. There's sort of the Power Five versus Group of Five perception going on that they have to sort of stand up for. There's the off-season talking points and in-state recruiting and all of this stuff. And BYU doesn't have to worry about a lot of that. They're, you know, they've got a lot, like you're talking about with the coaching stuff, they've got a lot of excuses lined up if their team doesn't play particularly well today or on Saturday, and that's fine. And then in terms of who's got the most to win, I think that's BYU. It's really a lose-lose for the Utes, and that's why Ute fans were so frustrated with it, because it's not a game we're sure to win, and even if we do win, it's not that great, because of course we were supposed to beat BYU.
Right, exactly.
We beat them four times in a row anyway, and then with all these injuries, I think fans are candidly a little bit more nervous than they might usually be about the odds of success going into this game.
Plus, it's not going to help you all that much more with recruiting, and it's a tough position if you're a Ute fan, definitely, to be in. A couple more questions, and then we'll let you go. What would you say are the key matchups, or maybe the key matchup going into this game?
I think it's really going to be on the wide receivers and their ability to get open, the Utah wide receivers' ability to get open against BYU's secondary. And going over the film, I mean, Travis Wilson has his limitations. He's not an elite quarterback, but he can make the throws if the guys are open. And the reality is that as the season wore on and some of the better players started to get injured, there just weren't receivers who could get open on a consistent basis. And hopefully against a team with a little bit smaller, a little bit slower secondary, these lesser receivers the Utes have are going to have a little bit easier time, so that they're giving Wilson throws that he can make, and he'll be able to get the balls in there and get that done enough. And it's always the same thing. We want to make sure that there's only six or seven guys in the box instead of eight or nine, so that the running back has somewhere to go.
And finally, do you have a prediction? Can you tell us who you think's going to win?
You know, I'm still working on it. I still got a lot of numbers to kind of cook up here over the next couple of days as I work on this article. But my gut is that I'm going to wind up going with the Utes by less than the spread, maybe 2 points, maybe a point. I think it's going to be a dogfight, just because it always is. And the Utes are down by injuries a little bit. But I think ultimately the big guys up front are what decide these football games, and the Utes have a substantial advantage on both sides of the ball there.
Joseph Silverswig from BlockU.com, thank you so much for giving us the time, and I'm excited for this bowl game.
Sure thing. Thanks you for having me, Al.
Check out all of our interviews for great insight into the Utes, Cougars, Aggies, and Utah Jazz at TornbySports.com. For the boss man, Grant Bagby, I am Alan Martindale. Thanks for listening.
This has been a Torn by Sports production.